Oh, heck, hey, hi, hello, I'm Ra-Ra, that's enough about that, but we're actually going to get more into that, because that's what this is about. I'm here with the one and only G, who will introduce themselves in just a moment, to do our Heartwork Talkback, which we're going to talk a little bit about the series, the concept behind it, what it was like working with all these fantastic people, and maybe a little bit about what's coming next from Thyad. G, hey, oh my, do you have a name, and may we know it?
I do. My name is G, otherwise known as @TTRPG across various socials.
Fantastic. Look at this. Heart of the Dungeon, still an international show. All right, well, we're going to go to those many-sided media ads real quick because you know how they can get if we don't.
Got her.
Oh my god, he threw the chair.
He threw the chair.
And now he's getting it back because we're gonna have to sit.
We are in Casey's home. That was Casey's actual chair.
You look out of the window and you see a Toyota Previa upside down on fire.
Oh my god. Oh.
But it's not nearby any trees or anything, so it's fine.
On fire.
It's fine. It's not fine to me, GM. Jesus Christ, that's my fucking car.
Dynamite headbutt.
He screams as he headbutts this man.
Honestly, his left jaundiced eyeball pops out of his head.
Oh, and if you were to take a picture the second their two heads were touching, it might have been an intimate, tender scene between friends or lovers. But if you were to take a picture at any other second, yeah. It is just absolutely horrifying.
For some men, violence is a form of intimacy, which is so sad.
That is
maybe
so
for
sad.
This man. But anyway. Boom! Smashed in the head!
Bodhi has a pocket full of, like, one oversized precious moment angel that has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh, it was his dick. There's a hole in his pocket and his penis, which does resemble a precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
And that's what we call facts.
He looks back and he says one last threatening phrase, pointing into the bar.
I'm gonna... And Violet shoots him in the head.
You see this guy's ear get blown off, flying off his head.
Ah! Bye-bye.
And then at this point, Scratch pops up like a mummy.
Ah, mummy!
Dynamite headbutt!
Something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and it looks back at you with red, wet eyes.
Got her.
We see smoke clearing, the sounds of battle fading, and in the background, the bone-to-bone click of dice as we look to one another here around this table surrounding where our story took place. Our imagination easily gets the best of us because we use Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from. They also offer downloadable model files for users to 3D print their unique designs at home for when reinforcements are certainly needed. Hero Forge is adding new items to the catalog every week so that the tavern will always have that mysterious guest. And with subscriptions starting at just $3.99, you'll have everything you need with Hero Forge at heroforge.com. Okay, well, we did that. We kept the lights on here at the studio. Thank you to Many Sided Media. I don't think I've ever even announced on the podcast that we're on Many Sided Media, but we have been for a little over a year, almost, I think, now. Thank you for joining us in the studio, for flying all the way here with all the, you know, the dangers of traveling to the States from other countries, just to sit here for this interview.
Thank you for having me. I wouldn't have done it for anyone else.
Oh my gosh, we love to hear that here. Everyone behind me in the studio in their robes just started clapping. So would you like to start with, how do you imagine this beginning, G? With a question, with just a basic premise of how the show happened? Where do you want us to go?
I think we should kind of just give a basic premise for anybody that maybe has been watching this and just wants a little wrap-up of kind of your brain around this, or for anybody that wants to listen to it and kind of wants to listen to this a little bit before to get a feel for it before they do listen to the full series, maybe.
I think that's a good idea. So this can be called an AP if one is generous, because there's about 3 to 5 roles in every episode, and I think that makes it officially an AP. But where the heartwork concept began was actually a breakup long ago in my more young life, where the way I coped with it was I wrote a short story about this city that people were creating. There would be a gardener that grew the colors, there would be a shepherd that herded the clouds, and they were slowly getting this shell prepared for life to begin again. And I've always loved that concept. I've always really loved and quoted a few times the statement that sometimes the most revolutionary thing you can do is create a path for life to move forward. And I think that's an emotional and a political truth. And so I've always wanted to do something more with the idea of hard work. I used to run a poetry publishing company, and I have a few books out and some prose and things. And I always thought it was going to be more that path. And then after Thaya had happened, I realized I had a platform, a little indie theater filled with freaks with poetry books in their back pockets who want to get a little nasty. And I realized it was the perfect place to do something with heartwork. It is a little artsy compared to some APs, I will say. Definitely not for the swashbuckler preferences, probably. You might get a little bored. I don't think there's one weapon or combat scene in the entire series. But it happened fairly quickly. If you've ever been invited to a large Thaiad production where the cast is like over 10, you usually get a weird little clip art video as an invite. That is me speaking over horrible graphics, explaining the concept, the recording schedule, what's expected, and all of those things. So you have the information in one little packet should you choose to say yes. And I sent that out to everybody and was luckily enough was able to schedule just about every recording within a 3-month span. And then that part of Heartwork began. The more narrative side of things is this is a dead world where life has come and gone, begun and ended time and time again. And then all these forces from outside of the world, whether they're forces of nature or forces of emotion, arrive to kind of prepare the world for life to begin. So it's following... How many of them are there? 16? It's following 16 of these players. Rick Perry only joins us for one, and Taylor Navarro gets 3 episodes, but everyone else just gets 2. So they can get one with one force of nature and one with another. And then they have these narrative moments where each one of them gets to leave a work on the planet, and then they mutually get to work on something together before they both go different ways. So it's really just showing off some of my favorite people in the space and some people I had never played with before.
Yeah, it is such a beautiful listen. The parallel between it, almost feeling like this, well, this barren world, like you describe it to be, but also it does feel kind of an ode to possibly a broken heart or a heartbreak and the work that needs to be done to fix that. And that comes through with every interaction between every force that kind of joins this barren world and the things that they do and how it's a collaborative effort and not just one thing is going to help this barren world thrive again. And I think that's just, the more you listen to it, the more it's obvious. And some of the moments between them are, the caster, they're so intimate and it almost feels like you're stepping in on an intimate moment. And actually recently listening to the most recent release as we're recording this with Wanda and Shroud, and their dance was just such an intimate moment. And I was like, I feel like I shouldn't be watching this, but I can't keep my eyes off of it because it was just so beautiful. So yeah.
Truly, the cast in this one really did 90-95% of all the leading. Going into each episode, I had my beginning paragraph written out and my final little outro written out and nothing in between. So, and we didn't really have a session zero. We had a conversation right before we recorded for about an hour. So we'd just sit down and I'd be like, so what do you want to do? And we would just go from there, and I took out myself a decent amount in this series. For those of you that aren't that used to the rah-rah style of sound design, I really like to add leading... I really like to ask leading questions where the player can take up the narrative control of their own actions, and then I like to remove myself from the recording later. So it just sounds like these players are just going on in this endless monologue. Sometimes it's easier to do that, and other times it's not, and not every series needs that the same way, too. Heartwork specifically, I wanted... Here's a hot take. I think there need to be more APs where the GM is not the main character, and I really didn't want Heartwork to be a focus on what I was doing on this world as much as what they were going to do on this world. For people who have listened to Thyad back, they'll recognize this world from a few other series, and there are many breadcrumbs from those other series that show up in this world that a new listener might be, corgis the size of bees, that's weird, but somebody who's listened to No Gods, No Afters and The Corner of Pleasure in West River will be like, oh, holy shit, that's the park in downtown Pangaea. So there's many a breadcrumb that I like to reward old listeners with all the way back to the first season that shows up in this, and that's just something you'll find in any series in Thyad. Even if the world changes, there are certain themes or even phrases that are reoccurring to make it feel a little more insulated while also feeling vast, if only for the last time.
Your comment about how you like to ask these leading questions and then remove yourself from them leads me into actually a question that we got from the Discord of people that wanted to ask questions about this. And it was, how much of yourself did you remove from the audio for Heartwork?
Quite a bit. More than with anything else. Because let's say a 45-minute Heartwork episode, it was probably about 2 hours at its raw recording, because we also had conversations. After each one of them took their turn, before we picked it back up with them working together, we had a conversation about what their intent sort of was. So there was a lot that was gutted. I was a little bit of a butcher on this one. I think there was one episode where I only had to say the intro and the outro and nothing in between. The next series will not be like that. The next series, I'm definitely more of a classic GM. And some of the series that have been out recently, like Apocalypse World or Ten Candles, I was a little more of a classic GM. So Heartwork itself was a different beast with like a different goal in mind when it came to that sort of thing. And I really wanted to piss off Navarre and just take out as much of myself as possible and then upset Kendo by just not having many dice be rolled.
I get that. I mean, I feel like Heartwork feels like an ode to your friends anyway, in just the way that it listens and the beauty of every episode condensed in itself. You can tell that care has been put into every single sound design of each episode because you care for the people that are telling this story with you. And I think that really reflects really well when you're listening to it, as you know, as a listener, as I listened to it. But if you are happy, I can read some other questions, because we had quite a few questions.
Oh, guide us, G. This, I'm lost here in this talk back, and you are the only lighthouse.
Okay. Okay, so I have some technical questions, and then I have some story-related questions. So I think let's dive into the technical questions first. So the behind the scenes, behind the cloak of Heartwork. Can you talk about creating the system that your castmates used in Heartwork?
Oh, wow. It's been a while. Like, this has been recorded for a little bit. The system was made before I even had the people cast, if I remember correctly. But I was trying to give them a generic group of moves that could cover everything in creation. Leaving things that could stay, changing things that already are, changing forces that govern things that stay. And then there was one vague move called Believe that was kind of a catch all the rest underneath it. But where all the other moves had a success from like 10 to 12 or a partial from 7 to 9, Power by the Apocalypse style, Belief was the only one that you needed a 10 to 12 for it to work, and everything else would fail. So there wasn't a lot of variation in the moves. They were able to assign like one or two modifiers to what they thought ahead of time may be the move they ended up using. But a lot of it had to do with writing out the moves in a vague enough language that a clever character could use it to put anything together. And I was actually very happy with how some of the moves went and the metaphors that the players were able to find. Because I had the best seat in the house for this series. A lot of the time I would just give a prompt and sit down on the ground out of camera and just watch them go. And sometimes I wonder if I started this whole show just so I can see these things happen, because I get such a kick out of the process and being amazingly impressed with the people that were in this series. And other times I just realize I want to use the beautiful pieces they offer that I can collage them into a story. And I don't always really need to be a vocal part of that story. So if you looked through our simple playbooks, not many of them gave any power to the GM. There was one or two with, like, you've lost control, the GM can pick it up from here. But all of them were just narrative prompts to get them to not just be like, this is what I'm making, but this is how I'm doing it through a path that resembles me. Because I didn't want just everyone walking around with a hammer and a toolbox. I wanted them to have to create parts of the world with the parts of themselves as they are their own world, and have that metaphor be easy for them to pick up if they want it. While I just leave metaphors and tools for analogy all around them, and then they can use them if they want, or they can do their own if they've brought them. So the system was easier. I made the system for No Gods, No Afters, and that's like a full Powered by the Apocalypse playbook, basic moves, playbook moves, and that one took quite a while. And the other one, Pleasure in West River, I made the system for that. So it felt like it was proper in the story to have me make the system for this as well, but I'm pretty happy to be running one that other people have made next, because it also takes a different type of energy to focus on things like mechanics when you're really just a glorified sound designer.
Perfect. So obviously you've mentioned that there were the two stories beforehand that you have told or you have created. How was your mindset different going into this compared to normal APs or your previous stories that are kind of connected to Heartwork?
The other stories were a little more focused on how the world of Glen will impact a party, a group, a individual. And this one was much more focused on how the players will change the world. So just giving them kind of a bare blank canvas at the very beginning, it's like you could go anywhere you want. Do you want to be snow? Do you want to be underground? Do you want to be in a city? Do you want to be by a burning windmill? And the look on a player's face when you realize you are giving them complete control of their scene, their framing, their tone, because the world is empty. There's not a context for them. They have just arrived. Is always a lot of fun just to watch how people blossom after sometimes initially stumbling, having just not been given that much freedom before. But one of my favorite parts of this series is how many players said it was their favorite character they had ever done or their favorite session they had ever played. And that's just a compliment to me, because all I did was give them permission. And then they create these beautiful moments. And having been in live streams or other podcasts, sometimes you're sitting on a very dense, lush character and you're waiting to get to even mention some of the lore that's controlling all of your desires and why you're making the decisions you're making as a character. And you maybe get a sentence here, a sentence there, to like throw in real quick in between a joke or before the scene switches. You never really get to present the character in that fullness. And I really just wanted to have a little platform for some of these people to show off. Some people that are well known who I'd ever played with before, like Super Dylan or Diana the Rose. I had never played with either of them before. And that was just beautiful. Dylan's character of Forgetting and Agresta are two of the most lush and full and elegant characters in this whole series, filled with elegant characters. So with them, it was a little more of like, ooh, I can't wait to see what they can do. With everyone else I had played with before, I knew what they could do, and it's why they were in the positions they were in. And it was always good to include some folks from the UK. So Wren, of course, a well-loved Thyad figure. And Sam as well, who played our beloved Moth Rhubarb in the Fairy season and became just part of the Thyad family in a way where Sam will never fully get away from us. Just came in and had such a beautiful separate sessions. And then when they came together in that comfort of friends who have played before, chasm and rage, like, it was just too much. I knew they had the potential to break my world, and it's one of the reasons why I had them record towards the end.
We're actually going to throw my original plan of technical then story out the window, and we're going to dive into the story, because this is a question that I actually really want to know about, because these characters are so rich. Mm-hmm. There is so much behind them. And I would like to know a little bit about how that character creation process came about, if you were necessarily a part of the character creation, you know, process with them. It's something that every time I've thought about it, I'm like, how have these amazing performers come up with these ideas that are so deep and so rich? And yeah, I just love to see behind the veil of that a little bit.
So there is a secret Discord server that is just for the Ballad of Heartwork, where after folks accepted the invite from the video, I brought them all into there. And I knew that was going to be an issue too, because I didn't want to have 16 session zeros. I knew safety wouldn't be a large concern with this because of the power of the premise. I very much explained it to them as like, it's like a Pixar short. We're not making anything edgelordy. Like, the magic is whimsy here, and that's what we're going to lean into. So I had that broken into micro and macro channels for character creation. Do you want to be something large, like global weather? Do you want to be something small, like the sound of a book page turning? And so that was the first way to separate them, and we got about half and half. And then after that, I basically just left them to group conversations. I'd say more than half came with an idea already that got a little fleshed out. And as they chatted back and forth, like, I might added some context. Like, when Sadie picked time, I was like, okay, well, I think you could pull that off. But just be careful of picking such a broad idea with such a short amount of time. And I think Sadie is one of those Grand Slam players for me. If you set them up right, they will give you, like, such a perfect performance that you don't even have to worry about them dropping the ball at all. And they just did a fantastic job with both of their episodes. So it was me more watching them get the ideas, and sometimes me having a very vague idea of what their character was. Like, when Diana would be like, oh, I'm the smell of plants. It's like, okay. And Taylor Navarro, I'm all the water in the world. All right. Okay, I guess this is fine. So sometimes I was going into the recording fairly blind on how are these forces going to get along? What is their personality like? And knowing that, do we need to get into that? Okay, so I really like setting up where your series or your concept can fail, because it's a brave stretch. It's a brave reach. It's something that's not, we're a bunch of adventurers and we have to fight the big bad and then it's over. There's this vague plateau I let my players wander lost through, and we try to form a story where there's not walls already built a lot of the time. And I'm lucky because I play with the best people in the world, but there's always the danger of just missing a cue, missing a prompt. Me as the GM not providing the right emotional tool there. And it doesn't fail, but it can fizzle out. Like, you just don't get that magic in a bottle. Like a series like No Gods, No Afters, with that cast and recording that process, like, it is the most magic in a bottle vibe experience I've ever had as far as recording sessions. We were all locked in and nervous and, like, sweating together and playing this beautiful story on the edge of a knife, kind of, knowing we could mess it up ourselves because it's that living of a thing. I think a lot of chapters, a lot of series, a lot of campaigns, they don't have that fluid life to them where there's like, this is where we're starting and this is where we're ending. In the middle, we have to hit these points, but nothing will change on our path. Heartwork was nervous because if I put two people together where their chemistry was wrong or their player chemistry as characters couldn't even find metaphor together, it might not be as intriguing as other episodes. So when I got the calendar meets for everybody for like a 3-month span, there was a lot of thought into who should play with who and how these character vibes could go together. And even sometimes if they were two sides of a coin, if that would be of a compliment or if that would put them at odds. And Taylor was the one automatically set with Rick Perry because I knew Taylor wouldn't be too starstruck and would be able to, Rick, I love you if you're hearing this, but Taylor just like balleted circles around Rick and I in that first episode with just beauty and grace as Tempest. And one of my favorite parts, because Rick accepted the invite, just incredibly nice. I sent him a pitch like, hey, you know, telling stories through world building seems to be something you're a little into, Rick Perry. You should really get on Thyad and not miss your chance, you know. No, I didn't word it that way. And when he agreed, I didn't think he had probably ever heard anything of Thyad. I know my GMing style's a little different than some other things. So watching his eyes when Taylor and I first started, and watching Rick realize what type of show or space he was about to have a performance in is always one of my favorite things of having new people on Thyad. So recording this whole series had just been such a joy to watch some people I love and people I admire just fully take on these vague, elusive character concepts and just use them to tell a story that we will never read the end of. In a way that I just had such a good time. I knew most of my work would be the sound design on this one. I didn't prepare as a GM for anything. I just let them show off, and this scene has some people that are amazing at showing off.
Yeah, no, that kind of leads me into my next question about the pairings that you did do, and how that worked. Was it a kind of, once you knew everybody's concepts, you kind of matched them up? Were there any changes along the way based on things that had happened during recording previous sessions? Yeah, if you want to talk a little bit about kind of the pairings, because some of them are quite unlikely, you would imagine. So it's quite interesting to dive into that.
Well, there was also the time constraints, of course, with that many busy players and trying to get that many sessions. We were very lucky to get it in the window we did, because I've had series trying to book like Gina and someone that we're waiting 9 months till we can start. So the fact that we were able to get all those in like 3.5 months was just kind of a gosh send, in my opinion. The only major change that happened was originally Feral didn't want to be in the series, because she just feels she does much better with a party and that type of dynamic. And as they would always say, does it really need another white femme? But Juicy Garland was in the series originally, and then due to scheduling and real life things, Juicy had to pull out sort of last minute. And Farrell found out the day before they recorded with Diana the Rose that they had to make a character, a concept, and would be recording the next day. And they did an amazing job. Farrell and Zoe's episode is one of the most touching ones in the series to me, especially because they were both in the fairies. And you can feel that energy between them and that comfort there. So that was the only real major cast change. I think of all 16 sessions, we had to reschedule like 3 or 4. Like, it really wasn't that bad as far as scheduling goes. So there was constraints on what days it would work with people. That was the first kind of realm of constraints. And then after that, it was like, well, would those characters go? Like, even Sam being Rage and Zoe being Love, that one was a weird toss for me, because I'm like, we'll see. Like, this could either be fine because they're both professionals and we'll be able to do a great job regardless, or it'll be this beautiful, like, comparison between the two sides of a different coin. And there wasn't one episode where I would say, like, oh, nope, that one let me down. There's not one I can think of in the whole series, because they found stories that I hadn't even thought of yet. I didn't expect anyone to make Christmas. Just to throw that at Emma and Sadie, or that rest in the middle of winter. I just didn't expect that. And it ended up being such an easy tool to make the growth of society there in the future look like something that could happen. Like, there was already a holiday waiting for them. And I think that was just a very human/humanoid-centric gift that was a little different than a lot of the other ones.
Yeah,
And then some pairings I just wanted to watch. Like, I wanted to watch Super Dylan and Ren. Mm-hmm. And see how that went together. And just a few pairings like that.
Yeah, you mentioned Sam and Zoe's episode. And first of all, when I find them, they better watch out, because that episode made me sob. It was beautiful. I loved that. Loved that one. But actually, let's talk about that. Did you, not to have a favourite child, but did you have a favourite episode or a favourite moment that has stuck with you from Heartwork?
There is a favourite moment. There was a favourite moment the second we recorded it, and I apologise to every other table because I probably mentioned it to each one of them as we were recording. The one with Julie and Louisa, when it was Bit and Echo. And they found, they made that orchard of the glass bottles where they could make. That was such a moment for me because I had never played with Julie before. And I knew Julie can do what they can do because they're one of the best out there. Louisa's a favorite secret one that hasn't been on a bunch of channels as often. I met them in a Candela Obscura for Queer RPG stream series I was in, and then brought them into the first pre-recorded like love game stream I'd ever did, and they just endlessly impressed me every time Louisa shown up in anything. So putting Echo and Bit together, there was that moment in the woods where they were exchanging the flower and echoing each other, and in my head I'm like, this is fucking WALL-E. Like, we have hit Pixar cute, like, whimsical vibes in a way that really moved me. And they were maybe the second one I recorded. So when we hit that in the path, I was like, okay, we can do this. I can make a series out of this. And I would just always remember that scene of the Echo and the robot in the glass bottle orchard. And there were so many beautiful scenes, like Agresta, like dancing on the water, Tempest, anytime they moved through anything, Ren taking care of Forgetting. There was just, I would just keep going because I just mentioned every episode. They just found so many of these tender, beautiful moments to make the world and their characters feel so large and lush. I don't remember the original question. Oh, my favorites? That was it, yeah. The Bit moment I brought up to every single player going forward. I was like, there was this beautiful moment between Julie and Louisa, and Bit ended up being one of my absolute favorite characters, and truly a heartbreak of a character. It never happened, but watching Bit and Forgetting together would have been maybe too much for everybody. Do you have a favorite?
I have two, actually. I've mentioned it earlier on, but the episode with Wanda and Shroud, the most recent as of recording this, that is out. That one was beautiful. I said it earlier, but it felt like watching an intimate moment that I shouldn't be watching, but couldn't take my eyes off of. It was beautiful just listening to those two bounce off of each other, but also Ira and the dog and the geode chasm and the skeleton, and I listened to that episode twice because it was so good, and I cried every time, and it was so beautiful. And maybe it's because I'm a small dog owner and I was thinking about my small dogs doing that, but yeah, those two are the two episodes that really, really moved me in ways that I didn't expect for them to.
Zoe was reluctant because, like, Rara, you know I don't like monologuing. You know I'm not a monologuer. Because Zoe's probably the most proficient voice actor I know. Way more into that than TTRPGs most of the time. But then with just the confidence and the craft that I would expect from Zoe, They just handled themselves so perfectly. Another one that comes to mind a lot is Mozzarella, the nightmare little girl. Just so many parables wrapped up in a beautiful character and performed just elegantly. God, this series is like when, you know, when people talk about some musical artist. Yeah, back in the 80s, they made a weird synth album that was too artsy. That's kind of how I see Heartwork, but in a way that I completely love and adore it. And I'm very happy I can still make something just because I want to. And I just love the whole vibe of the series.
Absolutely. I think I can probably work out the answer to this one based on the things that every kind of player brought to the table. But how did you decide the sound profile from one episode to another?
Heartwork sound has been a beast. I will say it from the beginning. The vibe I have as a sound designer is very much, I even made a meme about it not that long ago, is a conductor standing in front of the world. And it's like, all right, one, two, three, one, two, three. And then Heartwork begins. So a lot less drums than some of the other series. That was already something I kind of chose right at the beginning is, Heartwork has drums, but if you've listened to other things, especially Apocalypse World, which was more of our rock album series, drums are a very standard thing on Dyad, especially break beats. I've been in hip hop bands in the past because of my spoken word like experiences. So I have a deep love for that type of music. But I wanted this to be layer upon layer upon layer. I wanted the sound design to build and form from the middle outward, just like the world was doing, and just like the characters were doing. So the sound design and Heartwork took a very long time, is an easy way to put it. In an AP, it's like, oh, here's some characters talking in a hotel by the ocean. I'll add some ocean sound, some ambient music, but their conversation is the main attraction that's happening. Heartwork was a vague force of nature walking through a world changing time and weather and the emotions of plants. So there's not a very clear, crisp sound profile like opening a door, starting a car, sword fighting, things like that. I've said this before, I always try to treat one soundtrack as though it's a player and not just the background. And it changes with emotion, it changes with intent. And I wanted almost all of the sound design and Heartwork to be that. So it was just a different thing. Where most series would have maybe 3 to 5 layers at a time, because I'm kind of crazy, Heartwork would have more like 4 to 8 at a time, with them coming in and out and changing with the mood and pulse of the world. And I tried really hard to not have it have any hard edges and be a very rounded sound through the entire thing, in the same way that I imagined the world just turning and changing without a harsh peak or anything large enough to change its face due to how grand it is. And so it was very intentional that way, but also made it take a lot of time and some weird vague decisions. It was like, well, I don't know what lava formed from rage sounds like when it moves. Oh, Ren, you're really a pile of ants? Okay, sure. Let's figure all this out. So there was a lot of custom sound profile making where I would design like a 5-minute clip of a certain character and then just bring that into my file. As, oh, Sam's here, I better go get the Sam file. And it would be all the lava sounds with the popping and glass shattering backwards and things like that. It also made it a lot easier that I didn't have to worry about my GMing because of that. It let me fully focus on the sound and trying to just lift these monologues up as like the fog hovering on the surface of this world, just waiting to give it a new name. And definitely made me feel a little more part of the world and not part of the narration in a way that I loved, but I'm also fairly happy to be almost done with. Just because of the extra time.
you mentioned obviously the different shows you've done, the different stories you've told, and the different sound design work and how Heartworks is different to that. Did this series feel different being in an ongoing world?
It really did, because I love the world. I love Pangaea. I still listen to Pleasure in West River and No Gods, No Afters whenever I just have a moment to take in something again, because I like to be reminded of the path to here. So I wanted to do justice to a world that I loved and that I did create, but the players filled and made become alive and then broke and destroyed. Also, when you look at the No Gods, No Afters, they did horrible things to characters that I absolutely loved and did not expect them to do those things to them. There was maybe other stories planned that those characters were going to be in, but then you let Ian run around your world and things just happen. So I wanted it to be a fitting goodbye if it was goodbye, and I wanted... I wanted the soul of the listener who remembered the world from before to be moved with a nostalgia for it. The breadcrumbs for people who have listened to things in the past is one of my favorite things to hide in Dyad. It's a secret game within a game. Finch's wind chimes from Gina's character in Pleasure in West River, they show up in multiple other Pangea moments where certain things are reflected on or are dwelled on that could connect to actions in the past. And there's so many things nobody's even pointed out before. They're just for me. It is just what I love about the lushness of the world. So there was a lot of pressure in a concept I'd sat on for years, and a world that meant a lot to me when I needed a world to mean a lot to me. So it was a joy to sound design, but also I felt the weight of the history, if that makes any sense, and the sorrows and joys that had already happened there.
I think this next question will be for those that love the breadcrumbs and those that have been following all of these stories. Is this the final chapter in the world of Glynn?
So what I will say, there is one thing that's been alluded to hidden at the end of a series at one point, and that is a possible return of Ian and Tatiana playing their characters from No Gods, No Afters. And our plan and our early conversations for that is using the God Killer system as Ian is hunting Tatiana down to completely finish the story of Glynn before it begins again. So that's all I'll say about it for now, because there are things I don't want to say. But I would love to return someday to do a series of the Barista Rebellion from Pleasure in West River and tell the story of all of those innocents that were massacred in the streets fighting for their neighbors who all happened to work at the many coffee shops that exist in downtown Pangea. There's just so many things there, and I think it's a fairly broad canvas for storytelling. You know, it's one of my favorite worlds, though my favorite world, I will have to say, is probably still Sublime County from Tales Yet Told. Oh, look at that. There's a shirt right there. Tales Yet Told.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Never say never, I think, is the moral of that story. Rara, when we turn to your page and begin to read, what do we see when we close our eyes and see you? If you were to have been a character in this, what force would you have brought to the world?
Oh, goodness.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Oh, no, it's perfect. I'm just trying to resist the urge to have it be a breadcrumb force, because I would want to be a... Because the players didn't know it was Pangea until we were recording. And then I would drop little things, and some of them would pick it up, and others wouldn't. I mentioned it very clearly in episode one, just to see Taylor's face freak out. I was about to spoil the finale a little bit. That's going to come out this Wednesday, so I won't say that. Wait, I can spoil it. They'll listen to it by then. In the finale episode, when Grant's character goes up to a high place to look around, and it's described that he's on top of a broken statue... He's on top of a broken statue of a large arm and hand sticking out of the ground. You see that in the background of Taylor's Pleasure in West River episode after she jumps into the otter painting. No, after she jumps into the rabbit painting. Yeah, the chalk painting with the rabbit and the cloak made of eucalyptus. When she's riding on that magic creature, she sees this massive statue way in the background. And... I'm probably going to take that out, actually. I got way off topic from the question. But I really wanted something to do with, like, a modern aspect. Like that feeling when you're waiting for a light to turn green. Or a street light when it's raining. And I would do a definitely more of a micro, small, focused, insulated moment than something large, like the shadows the sun can cast. That's just too big for me. There's a lovely movie called The Legend of 1900 that's about a boy who was born on like a ship during the Titanic era, and he never leaves it and ends up just like playing piano very, very well. Tim Roth plays the main character, but there's this one line where he's looking at the whole world from the deck of this ship, and he's like, that out there is God's piano. Like, that's too big. I don't know how to play that. And so I would definitely do more micro as a character. Maybe the lack of love songs within a modern city. and how there needs to be a potential for not just survival, not just eating or creation or justice, but also a path for love to be rediscovered when it's starting all over from scratch once again. There's a lot of missed turns we can take and avoid certain aspects of history if tender hearts can be included in a conversation early. So I'd probably do, you know, a basic rah-rah move and do something in regards to love or love recovered or leading to, just because I don't think anything was really touched on in the world when it came to that concept yet. And some sort of Cupid type figure that is more of a void of romance, hoping to be joined by something that resembles itself, could have been an interesting aspect into like what type of people will live here later that we didn't really touch on too much. Nobody even invented death until Adam.
Absolutely. I'd love to see your little Cupid and the dog come together. That would be that would be incredible.
What would you play, G?
I'm so glad you asked, because I didn't want to be put on the spot with this question, so I've already got an idea. I think I would be something to do with the harvest and like nourishment and connection over the plentiful kind of abundance that the world provides, and taking kind of influence from Tempest and Hugh and Agresta and all of those things that helps the world provide and continuously provide. You know, it doesn't, it obviously it takes people or beings to cultivate the land, but the land will always provide. And the way that a mother will gather food for their young, or the connection over cooking a meal and sharing it with others, I think would be a really interesting thing to bounce off of as the world progressed from the barren land it was. It kind of makes sense that once all these things start to grow, how can they be utilized? How can they further on and nourish the souls that begin to inhabit the world again?
That's fantastic. There could be some great combos between like an abundance character and like Chasm. The creation and destruction just in this perfect circle. I love artwork. I hope someday I turn on a random stream and somebody's downloaded my weird PDF of the system and they're just being weird gods in some world. I would just be very happy. So G, when you were making artwork, what were you trying to... No, just kidding. See, I feel like we went through those questions fairly efficiently and close. We're only 50 minutes in. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I really wanted to say about artwork specifically, besides the fact that I loved it. I'll say this, I'll be transparent. Not nearly some of the social commentary that some of our other series have gotten, where people are following every week and like excited for twists. I'd say it's definitely more of a... it's meant for a different audience, in a little way where our Apocalypse World series was also meant for a different audience than some of the other ones. I will love artwork forever just because it feels very unique in a space. A lot of stories, or at least the way they're told, can feel very similar. And that is something I always am trying to push for Thyad, is doing it a little differently. In a way that sometimes can flop and sometimes doesn't. Heartwork, I want to stand up on that conductor stage at the end and like take a bow with everyone in the cast around me, because I feel like we put on a performance together and everyone who bought a ticket gets to go home happy because it was free. So I'm very proud of Heartwork and also happy for the things to come. And maybe, who knows, we'll return to Pangaea for some stuff in the future. And if not, it'll always be there waiting for those who hold Glynn in their hearts.
I touched on what I took from the story of Heartwork, listening to it. But if there was one thing that you hope that listeners took from Heartwork, what would it be?
I think healing is always more of a return to fullness when it's not done alone. Whether that's friends or a world or even a dream that you're following because it's the only thing that's there to keep you warm. I think, once again, the Thyad slogan at the end of a series is community is important. Now, sometimes creating the world we want to see requires us to resemble it first and work within ourselves first so we can help share out of the surplus of that community and the surplus of that tenderness and grace, because community is messy. So that's one thing that heart work just reinforced for me again and again, especially like the episode with Farrell and Zoe, where they're talking about it, how just if it was a dream, does that not mean it wasn't worth it? And does that not mean it wasn't important? And I think where Grant was a big person on the megaphone during No Gods, No Afters, so like, hey, this is like an also a fascist allegory about how that violence does not ignore heroes, and it doesn't just ignore a family because they're pure-hearted, like it can stretch across the board. I think heartwork can also show that that rebuilding and that return to some sort of inner fertileness can't happen alone also. And it happens to those who deserve it and those that don't. That chance and that call into rebuilding oneself and rebuilding a life. So, you know, once again, the cheesy thyad slogan of it's the friends we made along the way, but it's also what our friends made us along the way. Excuse me, sorry. But so I think that would be what I would take from heartwork as I try to not miss my eyes up a little bit, is that all of us are here mostly because somebody loved us when we needed it. And maybe that also goes for a world from time to time.
I think that is the perfect callback to when Sam, as Ira, said that this world deserves hope. But if you have nothing else to talk about on heartwork, shall we talk about what is next for The Heart is a Dungeon?
Oh, heck, gee, we should. So, when this comes out, it'll either come out right after Heartwork's done, within like a week or something, or there's going to be a little audio drama that sneaks out first. I always forget the exact name of it, but it's called something like Oh God, Oh No, Oh No, Oh God, Oh God, Oh No, Oh No. I don't know. It's something like that. But it's a real short, like 20-minute thing that I'm calling more of a dramatic audio than an audio drama, because there's only... It's like 5% dialogue and everything else is just sound design. Then after this comes out, what will be starting in August is Babylon You Are Everything, which is a long, almost sandbox world thing that's beginning on Thyad. The first main table will be Kim from 5GMs in a trench coat and Farrell from, you know, Thyad and all things Thyad. And they're going to be playing Thirsty Sword Lesbians on this small, dark coastal island of Babylon where strange things happen and strange things are visible. The first chapter, I think, already has like 15 people in it. There will be more added in forms of like NPCs that are reoccurring. And chapter 2 is going to have two different people at the main table as the story around this weird island keeps rotating around. But on the side, there's going to be some little mini-series that comes out. Grant of Game Master Monday actually GM'd a little mini-series for Thyad that I have yet to even hear, listeners. So I will be sound designing that as Grant is joining us as our first guest GM. And then Kendo Kendrick of Tales Yet Told, the amazing multi-award-winning channel and one of my absolute favorite listens, to be fair, in the space. Our live in the Woods, I think, is my favorite series of this year, right there tied with Afterlight from Blackwater, as far as my two top listens so far this year. But Kendo also joins as a guest GM for The Hunger So Sublime, which is like an NC-17 type of series that will be coming out from Thyad, where it's very violent and uncomfortable and dark, but it's a very beautiful story. And also in the back queue is with, for those, that's not what it's called. Gina just keeps calling it Wets. With Eyes to See, which is Navarre of Secret Nerd Podcast and Gina fucking everything. Playing The Corrupted, which was made by Navarre of Secret Nerd Podcast, as I GM this love story on a zombie apocalypse kind of setting. And so there's all these little mini-series that are like 4 to 8 episodes in the background that are going to be coming out when I can get to them, as Babylon is also coming out. So there's a lot there. There's a lot of audio drama stuff that I'm currently working on where a lot of the AP is sort of slowed down because I've already recorded it. But I'm pretty excited for the shows that are coming. Babylon will be a bit different than anything we've done lately. But for those who love Thirsty Sword Lesbians and love dark, gloomy islands filled with secrets and history and possibly very large walking creatures made of Nisr or Alf, then you might love it. And that's all I'm going to say about Babylon right now. You'll have to know more of it, G, because I'll have to give you a rundown on your character.
Secrets.
Yeah, we can't record the secrets. Everyone will know. All four of these listeners will know. But I guess just because I never do any of these, hey, if you're still listening, you can leave us a review if you want to. Everyone always hassles me because I never tell anyone to leave reviews or anything like that because I don't really care. It makes me happy, sure, but like, we'll keep doing the show. If you're too busy to get on there and click 5 stars, don't worry at it. Don't worry about me. Don't let me put that pressure on you. But we do appreciate it. And what else? We're winning a bunch of awards this year. If you don't follow us on any social media, No Gods, No Afters has already won like 6 and has been nominated for something like 16, 18, like something crazy. Our 10 Candles series. Why can't I remember? Gee, what was the name of the 10 Candles series? Oh, The Way of the Hollow Star. Also been nominated for multiple things, and I think, in my opinion, it was just a beautiful 10 Candles audio, which you don't see that much of. There's a lot more visual 10 Candles than audio, and it's one of my favorite systems. And a place as beautiful as ours, which is a little micro-fiction audio drama that Gene and I do together, that's been winning some things and getting into things as well. So if you just listen and don't follow us on social media, just know we're out here doing our best with all these professionals.
That short series with Gina was the first The Heart is a Dungeon series to make me cry on public transport. So... if you're not comfortable leaving 5 stars, you can join my review system of which public transport episodes make me cry on.
1 star for trains, 2 stars for boats. No. Mm-hmm. Chi, thank you so much for doing this with me. Look at us perfectly on time. It just hit an hour. We must be good at this.
We must be. Thank you for having me.
Gee, where can people find you when they're going to want to after they hear this? Like, oh, who's that voice? I have to get that voice in more projects.
You can find me across various socials at ttrp.gee. I am a content creator, actual play performer, and writer as of this year. And I am just in kind of various projects here, there, and everywhere, trying to pretty much infiltrate every table and audio production I can.
Fantastic. But I'm Rara. That's enough about that. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.